and welcome to Beyond the Text, a conning podcast featuring insights from our insurance research department. I'm your host, Alyssa Gittleman, a director and head of consulting and customer operations here at Conning. Join me as I welcome analysts and guests to provide insights on recent publications and emerging industry trends. Today, I'm here with Jay Sarzan, a director in our insurance research department and the author of our recently released Workers' Compensation Focus Report, titled Wearable Technologies Slow Acceleration to Preserve the Reserve. Thank you, Jay, for joining me here today.
Thanks, Alyssa, for having me. Appreciate it.
So today I really wanted to dive into the findings of this report, which I do want to mention to you all is available for purchase on the Conning website. Jay, could you start us off with just spending some time talking about the current state of the workers' compensation market?
Yeah, I think that's a good point to start as we discuss some of the technologies. First, I think everyone should understand that workers' compensation has been on a one-decade-long tear. They've seen historically low combined ratios, and they've sustained for the last 10 years, primarily because of low frequency. In other words, people aren't getting as injured as frequently as you would have in the past. And I think that can be kind of, you know, attached to what I would call better work safety programs. I think there's more of an emphasis on those programs within workplaces to ensure that people are being careful, that they're, you know, not being overworked, you know, whatever the program might be. So what that has done is it allowed workers' comp insurers to write a lot of business, keep a lot of the premium that they've been bringing in, which is great. So basically, the reserves have been growing exponentially to levels that we've never seen before. And so as a result of that, what we're seeing now is that state insurance commissioners are noticing how profitable workers' compensation insurance carriers are. And they're saying, well, now you've got to lower your rates. So I would say that right now, because the workers' comp is seeing very low frequency, high reserves, I think that there's, you know, downward pricing pressure. It's a highly competitive market. Carriers want to get into this business because they want a piece of what is a lucrative piece of business.
Thank you. Now, is there any reason to believe that this environment might start to shift?
Yeah, well, all good things must come to an end. And so I think we're starting to see that now, although the numbers might not necessarily indicate it. So we'll continue to see lower combined ratios under 100, probably for the next couple of years. Okay. But what we have to recognize is that accident year loss ratios are actually deteriorating. Those are, if you look at carefully, for the last year or two, and maybe even 3 years, I can't quite remember, but at least for the last two, you're seeing accident year loss ratios over 100. And that's an indicator that while frequency may be lower than it has been historically, you're not getting the same kind of lower frequency that we've been used to over the past decade, where it's gone down on an almost linear progression. It may be plateauing. So what that means is that if you don't cover the gap between your actual losses, if you're actually in your losses, if you don't cover them with drawing down your reserves, your combined ratios would go above 100. So that's what's been happening. The combined ratios have been lower because many insurance carriers are drawing down the reserves to mask over those accident year loss ratios deteriorating.
Okay, and what exactly is causing that deterioration?
Well, as I mentioned, you know, frequency is still low, but the drop in frequency has begun to decelerate. It isn't quite as robust as it used to be. It's just not projecting as low. I think also we're seeing an aging workforce. You know, the older people you see in the workforce, they may not be injured as frequently as others may have been in the past, but because they're older, their injuries just take a little longer to recover from. There may be some more, there may be greater severity given their age. There's a lot of possibilities there. Another is just that people are prone to accidents, and no matter how many safety programs you put into play, no matter how much you raise the flag, there can only be so many accidents prevented as a result of work safety programs. So I think what we're seeing is sort of a set of diminishing returns on those work safety programs. I mentioned it earlier where state regulators are looking at these work comp insurers and saying, well, you guys are printing money hand over fist, you're too profitable, you guys got to cut rates. So what's happening is that you're seeing frequency kind of plateauing, you're seeing an aging workforce, and as this is happening, we're seeing what we call diminished rate adequacy. So as all these events are happening, as medical inflation is also increasing, as medical inflation is increasing, as frequency is starting to plateau, these insurers are starting to have their rates cut. So that will show up in combined ratios at some point down the road. So I just on the phone earlier today with a treaty underwriter from a major reinsurance carrier, he acknowledges that yes, the worm is about to turn.
Interesting.
Yes.
So it sounds like insurers are going to face a much different work comp environment in the coming years.
Yep.
That has to be true. Just could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, we don't have a crystal ball. Neither does this person.
You don't have a crystal ball?
I don't.
Okay.
Well, you know what? It's in the shop. So, when it comes out, we'll reference it and see what it says. But the person with whom I spoke earlier, he doesn't have a crystal ball either. But I think that it makes sense that insurers, as they're facing an environment that may be turning against them, ought to consider ways to kind of preserve the good times for a little bit longer, just to make sure that they're doing everything they possibly can to keep accident frequency at a lower level or at a similarly low level. And I think that's something that a lot of insurers are kind of kicking around right now.
Great. So that kind of brings us to the central theme of your recent report. Insurers must find something else to keep frequency low for the next decade, because it's likely that the current efforts might not be enough given that shift. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But again, I just want to be clear, they don't have to abandon their current efforts. Okay, there's a lot of validity to having these workplace safety programs. So you shouldn't say, well, we're going to abandon them because we're seeing diminishing returns. That's not it at all. What the central theme of the report is that there's a strong likelihood of the worm turning. Insurers need to be aware of it. And if their situation warrants it and it makes sense to them, they ought to consider adding some new tools to their toolkit about keeping workplace accident frequency on the lower end.
Got it. And what tools do you think that are available might help mitigate work comp claims?
Well, how long do we have? Because we could go
a while. Not long, Jay.
Not
long. You.
Okay. Well, I don't want to give away the cow necessarily, but the honest answer is that the industry's seen a pretty big proliferation of devices that could be employed to help insured firms and their workers maintain a higher degree of workplace safety. So at a high level, I'll just walk you through what these devices can do. They can monitor a worker's posture. As you can imagine, if you're a worker and you're lifting heavy items over the course of a day or course of a week or whatever, that repetitive strain can probably lead to some lower back injuries, leg injuries, shoulder injuries, however you're lifting something. These devices are out there that can help monitor that positioning. It can monitor the posturing and the motions that they're undertaking, and that will be something that I can talk a little bit more later, but that's effectively what they're doing. Okay. They can measure biometrics, so your pulse, your blood pressure, your temperature. So if you're a worker and you're under some real duress, these devices will make you or your supervisor aware of it and say, look, you need to take a break. You need to get a glass of water, whatever the case may be. Another element that these devices provide, proximity to hazards. So you can outfit, so say you work in a warehouse and you can outfit forklifts with a beeper, and it will send out a signal to a device when anyone wearing that device is in close proximity to that forklift.
Oh, wow.
Or, a warehouse vehicle, whatever it is that's vehicular, because, you know, you're not barely paying attention all the time, and you want to make sure that you're standing clear of all of these hazards. So that will set it off, and then you don't get murfed by the forklift or by, you know, the transport car, whatever, the machinery, whatever you have. Also, proximity hazards can be for environmental hazards. So you may be prone to working in a natural gas setting, so a natural gas leak, or if you're working in chemicals, it will let you know that you're in proximity to a dangerous chemical. A lot of these devices offer real-time warnings, as I kind of, you know, just discussed with the forklift example. It can be done with a beep, via haptic, which is, you know, the vibration of a particular device. And the nice thing is that's real-time. A lot of people who look at these types of devices look at the data that can be collected from these devices and say, okay, well, we can use this for some training purposes. We can point out instances where a person may have bent incorrectly or may have lifted improperly, and then you can coach them to avoid that kind of behavior. So at a high level, that's what these devices do, okay? And there is a myriad of them. There are vests that you can throw on your torso. It's mostly ergonomic. Armbands, which can detect, you know, motion, but also, it's for ergonomic purposes as well. You probably can imagine you've got belts or waistbands. That's for when you're bending around and lifting. Those will be helpful. Those are probably the most comprehensive wearable devices that can be used to prevent workplace accidents. There are a bunch of others, like exoskeletons. They're very expensive. It's sort of like a, you know, Terminator type of apparatus where you can put yourself into an exoskeleton suit and lift things up, where you're guiding essentially a machine to lift or move something very heavy. It's crazy. I mean, and, you know, I think that's probably a limiting device because it's so expensive, but it's very effective. You're pretty much letting the device do the work, and you're just kind of guiding it along, right? There are others, you know, smart helmets, smart boots that can tell how you walk, smart clothing. A lot of that is, you know, designed to measure your biometrics. We've all heard about smart glasses. Those are pretty limited as far as what you can offer as far as workplace safety enhancement. But you can stretch it out a little bit and say, yeah, maybe there is something there. Two of the more personal wearables, rings, smartwatches, okay? Those measure biometrics, and a lot of folks will point to them and say, yeah, those are that'll be good enough. We can, you know what our person's heart rate is. And yeah, if that's all you're interested in, sure. But, you know, smartwatches and rings aren't going to allow you to know how you're bending or how you're lifting. So most of those truly severe workplace injuries wouldn't necessarily be prevented with rings and smartwatches. But, if it's better than nothing, it's, you know, at least to know how their heart is doing, I guess that's fine. So again, extensive list. I didn't go through every one of them and how every one of them works exactly. But I think you get the idea that there's a lot out there for people to choose from.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like there's a lot of options out there. And I know you mentioned the smartwatches. I've been following those closely, and I've had those for over a decade, but I'm not the typical worker either at a desk.
Yeah, well.
I don't know what my heart rate is at all times, but that's...
I bet you it was higher a little while ago.
Yes, definitely. It definitely ebbs and flows during the day.
Right.
And so I really wanted to get to a big question that your report goes through on whether you are seeing the adoption of these technologies and what that adoption is. And I know for this report, you did have a survey. We haven't talked through that. And we did survey professionals and just try to gauge that adoption of all of those different types of technologies that you just talked through. So I was hoping you could spend some time on that.
Yeah, I can go through a little bit. I mean, and really the genesis of this was I attended a workers' comp focus conference in July, ASCIF, and a lot of buzz was going on about wearables. You know, everyone was talking about wearable technology. What could they do? And I said, well, you know what? It's one thing to kind of talk about it off the cuff at a, you know, networking event at a conference. Let's get down to brass tacks and let's ask a wide range of executives at workers' comp insurers really what they what they thought. Is this something that's viable? And I think to long answer, I think probably a high level answer to your question is that I think it's safe to say, based on the survey we did, the answer is no. We're not seeing wide scale adoption at this point. And I qualify that no with a not yet. So let's just start with those who are. Roughly 17% of our respondents indicated that their firms are currently deploying or encouraging the deployment of wearable technology. So that's almost one in five. And then you think, oh, that's 80%. That's not. But getting below the surface, nearly half, 48% of those, the 80%, indicated that there are plans in place.
Okay.
Or that they're actively contemplating a wearables technology program. So it's not all doom and gloom from the wearable side. I think if you know you were to add the numbers up, it would probably be roughly 34% are either currently employing wearables technology or have plans to do so within the next 3 years. So a little over one in three. And you know, again, I don't know if we can expect 80-90% adoption rates, because really I think one of the main trip ups for these executives is that they're looking at these wearables and they're saying, well, they're expensive and we don't know how proven they are. And insurance executives don't love to lead, but they love to follow fast. So my hypothesis is that as more adoption occurs and you see more success with these wearable technologies as far as being able to prevent workplace injuries, I think you'll start to see an acceleration. Now, I don't expect to see, you know, again, 80-90% adoption rate, because I think in a lot of instances, firms may be writing policies that don't lend themselves to having workplace accidents try to be prevented. You know, if you're underwriting a bunch of accounting firms, I suppose you could, but really, it's just not something that's going to be in the wind. So I think my hope is that the industry will see the value of this technology, of employing this technology, if not from an ROI perspective, at least from a, I hate to sound like a moral, from a moralist, but from a moral perspective, if you can do what you can to prevent injuries to your workers, I think that you're probably going to send a real signal to them that you care.
Absolutely.
And well, you also don't want to play the long tail workers' comp claim, but you care. But I think at the end of the day, what the industry needs to do is see a lot more proof. They need to see these devices out there. They need to see some loss runs from insurers who've employed these technologies versus those that haven't employed those technologies. And if there is a marginal difference that is meaningful, then you can go with it. But then, of course, there's always the, well, you know, how much are we willing to invest in this? And I'm not going to give away the numbers because I want people to come to and get the report. But, you know, we dive into, you know, what types of incentives are you offering? You know, how far would you go towards helping your insureds adopt this type of a wearable technology program? So all of that information is in there as a result of the survey.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And this report, as we have said, is available to purchase on the conning.com website. And I'm looking forward to just seeing, I think you've picked this topic up when a lot of people are talking about it. Yeah. And as we saw, the adoption isn't there yet. So following this trend closely over the next coming years will be interesting to see how it changes.
Absolutely. Look, I'd rather be ahead of the trend than behind it.
Absolutely.
Very good.
So thank you all for joining and listening to this, and we hope that you'll subscribe. And if you have any questions, please email insuranceresearch@conning.com, and we hope to see you at the next episode. Thank you.